Everyone is OCD to some degree. The question is if we just exceeded the amount on the spectrum. So everyone's claustrophobic also to some degree. I'm a little bit claustrophobic. Probably a little bit more than most, but I think I'm still within the spectrum. Alright, I guess now we can close it up. Okay. Parasha begins. Parasha Lech Lecha. Vayomer Hashem el Avram Lech Lecha me'artzecha u'mimuladetcha u'mibeis avicha el ha'aretz asher areka. Hashem tells Avraham, go from your land, from your birthplace, from the house of your father, to the land that I will show you. The question is, and just about everyone grapples with it, is why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose to use the words, to the land that I will show you? Why doesn't he say Eretz Kanan? That's where he was going, right? Eventually the Pasuk tells us that Vayavor Avraham and they went towards it. They came to Eretz Kanan. So why does it say? Why doesn't it just say Lech el Eretz Kanan? Why does it say Ela Aretz Asher Areka? What's pshat? Rav Chalap, Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalap, who was the Rosh Hashiva of Merkaz Harav, along with Rav Avram Yitzchak Cohen Cook, had the beautiful explanation. He says the following. He said he didn't want to call it Eretz Kanan, because he wanted to teach Avraham a particular lesson. He wanted to teach Avraham that although when you get there, it might look like any other place, Asher Areka, I will show you that there is dimensions to Eretz Yisrael that are nowhere else. Right? You get here and you think, yeah, look, we have, I remember when I was in Israel, so at the time, you have a Hard Rock, I don't know if they still exist in America or anywhere. You have a Hard Rock Cafe in Israel. You have it in Paris. You have it in New York. You have it in Toronto. You have them all over. Right, in Boston. They exist everywhere. What's the difference between Eretz Israel and anything else? I already said go to Eretz Canaan. Then it just becomes a place like any other place. But Kadosh Baruch Hu was telling him that there's a deeper dimension. There is more to Eretz Yisrael than meets the eye. Ela Aretz Asher Areka. I will show you that there's much more than that. I think Rav Nachman has a line in one of his Sfarim. Rav Nachman Rebbe, I think, writes that when you get to Eretz Yisrael, you'll see sticks and stones, right? Like any other place. But right, and don't be surprised. It has sticks and stones. Like sometimes people get here and they expect to find like, I don't know, like shas growing on trees. Like in America you go and there's money growing on trees, and then that's all you get here and you expect to find like a tanach growing on the tree. No, it's sticks and stones. But then says of Nachman, you have to recognize it's not just sticks and stones. There's an added dimension there as well. So I'll give you guys an example. Rav Huttner was flying to Eretz Yisrael. Right? So it was one of those flights where you land, you leave America in the States, you leave America in the evening, and you land in Eretz Yisrael in the afternoon. So when he had landed in the afternoon, he went into his carry-on, and he took out his tefillin. So his Talmud that was there with him said to him, I don't understand. We put on tefillin on the plane. 5 hours ago, 4 hours ago, whatever it was. How come you're putting on tefillin again? Said Rav Huttner, those were chutz la'aretz tefillin. Now I'm putting on Eretz Yisrael tefillin. The things that you do in Eretz Yisrael take on a lot more significance, says Rav Huttner. There's a certain kedusha that you have to tap into. Right? The same Rav Huttner actually is famously told that when Rav Lichtenstein came to visit Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Rosh Hashiva of Gush, Haratzion, when he first came to visit Eretz Yisrael, so after his trip, he was learning by Rav Huttner, and he went to Rav Huttner, and Rav Huttner asked him, what did you see? Eretz Yisrael, was it great? He said, oh. So Rav Lichtenstein said, oh, it was great. He said, what was so great about it? So he said to him, well, I saw a lot of Talmud Torah. Okay. You see a lot of Talmud Torah in America also? I see a lot of minyanim in America also. I saw a concentrated population everywhere you turn. Jews, all right, go to Borah Park. Jews everywhere. So then Rav Hudna turned to him and says, did you sense the Kedusha? That's the Mila of Eretz Yisrael, Asher Ar Eka. That's why it doesn't say Eretz Knan, right? Rav Lichtenstein said he felt very defeated. He's like, of course that's Eretz Yisrael. Of course there's Kaddish. Of course I felt entirely different, right? So that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to say El Eretz Knan, but rather Asher Ar Eka, I'll show you, hopefully as time grows on, you'll learn to appreciate that there is a deeper dimension to Eretz Yisrael that does not exist anywhere else in the world. Okay. After the Tzivui, so it says the following. Ve'escha legoy gadol, I'll make you into a great nation. Ve'avarchecha, I will bless you. Ve'agadla shemecha, etc. And then it says, Pasuk Dalet, Yud Beis Dalet, Ve'yelech Avram ka'asher diber elav Hashem. Avram went as God commanded him. And those of you in Mashir have heard this. Avram went as God has commanded him. And then in Pasuk Hey, the next time it says, Vayikach Avram et Sarai Yishto, Vedlot ben Achiv, he took his wife, he took his nephew, et kol rechusham asher achashu, all of their belongings, et hanefesh, all of the people that had become close to them. And then they went to Eretz Knan. So now, in light of that pasuk of Avram took Sarai and Lod and all of his property, then pasuk Dalet, the previous pasuk, becomes superfluous. Why does it need to stick in? Vayelech Avram kasher diber elav Hashem. Vayikach Avram et Sarai ishto. Why couldn't it just say Vayikach Avram et Sarai ishto? Why did you need to stick in? Avram went as God commanded him, and only then does it say, and Avram took Lod and his wife, etc. So in the Sichas Be'avodas Hashem, Rav Marzalish. One more time. The Pasuk says, God commands Avram, go to the land that I will show you. Then the Pasuk says, and Avram went. And the next Pasuk it says, and Avram took Sarai Ishtov. So then, we know that Avram went. All it needed to say was, go to the land that I will show you. And Avram took Sarai, Lot, the Nefesh, Vayetzul Alechet Arz Aknan. And he went towards Arz Aknan. Why do you need that middle Pasuk when it suddenly say, Avram went? What's that all about? So, two answers. Number one, to teach us about a little bit of a passion. I saw this in the Sefer somewhere, I don't remember where. So, he says the following, that the minute Avram heard from Hashem, go to the land that I will show you, what did he want to do ever so badly? He wanted to go. He was driven with a passion to be Mekayim Devar Hashem. Practically, could he do it? No. He couldn't. Why not? I got to first tend to my wife and my family and the property. I couldn't do it. But his passion, his deepest desire was, oh, I wish I could just go right now already. I can't. And what the Torah is teaching us is that when you're driven with a passion to fulfill the will of Hashem, then God considers it as if you have done it. Machshava tova. A good thought, a thought of I wish I could do this mitzvah, even if you can't, God gives you the credit as if you have. And that's why it says, Vayelech, even before he takes his wife and kids. It says, at this point, God already had it considered as if he's done it. The fact that he had to wait another week or month or however long it took for him till he organized everything, that didn't compromise, that didn't undermine the mitzvah. As far as God was concerned, he had done it immediately. The passion was driving him, and because he was passionate about it, oh. That's answer number one. Answer number two, Rav Meiselish and Sichus Be'avodas Hashem suggests the following. He says that really, the minute Avram heard the Tzivu, you know what he did? He went. Before he even went to get his wife, and his nephew, and his property, and all of the Talmidim, before he did any of that, he at least started to go a little bit. He wanted to go a little bit. Why did he want to go a little bit? Because there is something called koach hareshit, the power of starting strong. And he knew, that same passion that we spoke about a second ago, that if he did not act on it right away, then that passion would begin to dissipate, it would begin to wean a little bit, and it wouldn't be felt as strong. And Abraham knew that in order for him to succeed in this endeavor, which was not an easy endeavor, it had to be strong. And therefore, while he was feeling the passion, he capitalized, he pounced on it, and he did it with passion. Mashal Amad Davar Domer, Rav Tzadok HaKohen says the following. It says, Father and son, destitute, poor, have no money whatsoever to their name. And they're walking in the street, and the streets in the time of Rav Tzadok HaKohen are muddy. Right? We don't have pavement. And they're walking in the street, and in the mud, in the puddle, the father thinks that he sees some sort of shiny gold coin, which would provide for them, sustenance. So he tells his son, can you get the coin? And the son says, no, Abba, it's probably not even a coin. I'm so tired. I'm on the verge of starvation. I'm fainting. It's just too hard for me to bend down and get it. Forget it. But the father said, no, but it could be that. So the father bends down and he picks up the coin. And sure enough, it's a coin. And the coin is good. And the coin is able to buy them apples. 10 apples. 13 apples, I think, is the number that Reb Tzadok HaKohen uses. 13 apples. Right? And then the father turns to the son and says, oh, look, thank God we have apples. Here, take some. And the son says, I won't take any. You're the one that bent down. You're the one that pushed yourself. You deserve all the apples. The father is the father. The father wants to feed his son. The father says, no, really, take it. It's fine. I'm okay. You need it. Your face is gone. Son says, I won't take it. So the father devises a plan. And he says, all right, son, come with me. I have to travel some distance. If you don't mind, I want to think for myself. Walk behind me. And the son is walking behind the father. The father's walking ahead. And every couple of steps, he drops an apple in the mud. And the son doesn't realize, he thinks that he found an apple in the ground. And he says, oh, thank God, I found some food. And he picks up the apple, he cleans it, rubs it, and then he takes a bite and he eats it. Right? The father does this 10 times over, 13 times over. Until finally, he's fed his son. What's the lesson over here? This is a lesson again of Koach HaReshit. Had the son just initially picked up the coin, had he started strong, he would have had 13 apples, easy. Just at a basket, eating away. But because at the beginning he was lazy, so in order to get the same amount of apples, he had to bend down 13 times over in order to get the apples. Says Reb Tzadok HaKohen, that's the Koach HaReshit. That's why when Avraham Avinu heard, go, what did Avraham Avinu do? I gotta go. I need the Koach HaReshit. In fact, the letters Israel is Rosh Li. I have one of the traits of the Jewish people is that we want the Koach HaReshit. We want to start off strong. And when you start off strong, you can keep on going. Okay. Next. Avraham tells Lot at the beginning of the Parsha, right? Lot has property, which he has gotten, you know, through living with Avraham. Avraham obviously has a lot of property as well. And the Pasuk tells us the following. Lo nasa'u tama aretz lashevet yachdav. The land wasn't vast enough for both of them to sit together. Hayar chusham rav. There was too much cattle. Right? This is in Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Vav. And naturally, what happened? Vayhiri ben roi miknei Avram ben roi miknei Lot. There was an argument that broke out between the shepherds of Avram and the shepherds of Lot. And Avram steps in and he says to Lot, Vayomer Avram el Lot, Al na tehi meriva beini uveinecha, let there not be a fight between me and you. Right, it's interesting. Who was the fight between, really? The shepherds. But Avram said, let there not be a fight between me and you, because Avram knew that once there is argument and dissension, it leads to further, and they've said, it's only a matter of time before you and I start to fight. Let there not be an argument, let us split now and go our separate ways. Why? Pasuk Chet, and here is the main, here is the money ball, and here's what we need. Anashim Achim Anachnu. Because we are Anashim, we are men, we are Achim, we are brothers. Comrades, brothers. And therefore, let us not fight. Rashi quotes from the Medrash. What does it mean that they're Achim, that they're brothers? Anyone remember the Rashi?
They look like each other.
Yeah. Domin beklaster panim. They looked alike. So what does that mean that they looked alike, and why is that relevant? So the Shemin HaTov, a Rav of in Williamsburg, the Shemin HaTov in his Sefer writes the following. He's actually my former Chavrusa's uncle. Shemin HaTov writes the following. He says, you know what Avram's problem was? What was it that Lot's... Why were they arguing? You guys know why they were arguing? They were arguing because the Lot shepherds were herding in fields that did not belong to them. They were stealing. Right? And Avram's shepherds told them, you can't steal. And they're like, what are you talking about? The whole land belongs to us. Anyway, it's going to be given to Avram eventually. And Avram doesn't have any children. And since he doesn't have children, the next of kin is Lot. So it all belongs to us. We could herd wherever we want. Right? Now, Avraham didn't do that. Avraham said, when we get what we get, we can take it. But if right now the land is not ours, so for us to herd our sheep in fields that don't belong to us is stealing. Avraham's concern, says the Shemin HaTov, was Chilul Hashem. What's going to happen? Lot would go visit his shepherds in the field. Bystander looking into the conversation of Lot and his shepherds would say, hey, there's the shepherds talking to Avraham. Because he can't tell the difference between Lot and Avraham. Oh, that's weird. Avraham and the shepherds are in a field that doesn't belong to Avraham. Avraham is stealing. And because Avraham thought that there would be a Chilul Hashem, that people would think that the person who is going throughout the world and preaching God's Torah and teaching chesed, and now you have to be thankful to God. He's the person that's morally bankrupt. He's stealing. That's what God is about. It's a Chilul Hashem. So therefore, Avram told Lot, you got to go. We got to separate. Go far away. And he didn't want to be in the same vicinity where people could mistake him and Lot. Right? And it comes up again, the Shemin HaTov says. When does it come up again? When Avraham goes to rescue Lot. Right? Why does he want to rescue Lot so badly? Because if he wouldn't rescue Lot, right, they would assume that they captured Avraham. And they would say, oh, look, the preacher of God, what do you have to say for your God now, mister, here in captivity? Right? How do you feel about your God now? Not so hunky-dory after all. Sure, you got out of the furnace way back when, but where is your God now? So Avraham Avinu couldn't have people talking smack about God. So what does he do? He goes and he rescues Avraham. Chilul Hashem is something that we have to avoid at all costs. Even though the war was practically suicidal. Go yourself with 318 men and fight against an army of 4 kings that had just defeated an army of 5 kings. So we're talking about a strong army with armor, with a lot of people. Right? But why does he do it? Because it's a Chilul Hashem otherwise. Listen to this great story that Rabbi Fran tells. Rabbi Fran tells that Rabbi Schwab, who was a Talmud of... He was a Rav in Germany. Eventually he became the Rav in the United States of the Yekish community in Washington Heights, of the Breuers community. But before he made it to the States, so he was a Rav in Germany, you know, from the same school of Rav Hirsch and Hildesheimer. So he was in shul in the early 30s, and it was at the time of the Parsha Kitisa. In Parshas Kitisa you have Cheta Egel. And he was trying to explain to his congregation, based on what Rav Hirsch had said, unbelievable story, what is the Cheta Egel? The Cheta Egel wasn't that they were worshipping this calf. They knew this calf wasn't God. They knew God was God. They were hoping the calf would be an intermediary between them and God. like Moshe was an intermediary, this calf would be an intermediary. It's not that they were looking to serve a new god. It was an intermediary. In German, the word for intermediary is Mittler, a middleman. Mittler. Right? In Yiddish and English, German for that matter, the T and the D are, like, for example, the word for hand in Yiddish is Hand. So middle is Mittel. Right? So, and he kept on saying, we don't need a Mittler. We don't need a Mittler. This is the early 30s. There's Gestapo sitting in the shul. And the Gestapo thinks that he heard Rav Schwab say, we don't need a Hitler. We don't need a Hitler. This is when Hitler becomes chancellor already. And he's talking like that about our leader. So the Gestapo reports Rav Schwab. Rav Schwab is obviously dragged in for questioning. And he says, no, I didn't say Hitler. I said Mittler. And he takes out the reverse chumash and he shows them, Mittler, we don't need, right? Mittler, not Hitler. So they say, whoa, wait a minute. Did he say Mittler or did he say Hitler? So they say to him, all right, we're going to get back to you. Right? You can go home for now. We'll get back to you. So he's nervous. Rav Schwab, oh no. Like he's panicking. So every week, he's like checking in. Did you figure it out? Like, am I okay? Am I not? Finally, after 2 months of checking in with the Gestapo every week, they said, just stop hocking us. Enough, all right? So he understood that he was off the hook for now. Here is the kicker. Says Rav Schwab, for those 2 months, where he wasn't sure where he stood with the authorities, where he thought that at any moment in the middle of the night he may be dragged out of his house, he slept in his clothes. Why? Because he had seen other people, you know, during the perjuries, that were dragged out of their house in the middle of the night and hanged in the public square, right, in their pajamas. And he thought it would be a Chilul Hashem if they were to drag him out in the middle of the night and hang him in his pajamas. The Rav of the community to be seen hanging in the pajamas would be a Chilul Hashem. He wasn't concerned about possibly losing his life. Even at this very, very crucial juncture, what is he concerned about? Chilul Hashem. I cannot make a Chilul Hashem. Right? That is a lesson for all of us about trying to make sure that we're always doing things, as we say in benching, a pasuk for Mishlei, Nimtzachein v'sechel tov, let us find favor, b'enei Elokim, in the eyes of God, but also Adam, meaning when we do things, we have to make sure that they're pleasing, right, and they represent in the best possible way. Okay. Alright, Ben Shai, this one's for you. I thought of you. In Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Vav, right? Bris Bein HaBesarim. This is the famous covenant that Hashem strikes with Avraham. Right? He says to him the following. He says, listen, Avraham, go outside, count the stars, right? That's how your children will be as well. The next pasuk says, "Ve'hemin b'Hashem," he believed in Hashem, meaning Avram believed it would come through. "Ve'yachasheva lo tzedaka," and he considered it, presumably he capital H, considered it worthy tzedek, something that is admirable. Okay, so people ask, this is brought down to the Chumash Ma'or V'Shemesh. The Ma'or V'Shemesh, he asks the question, what's the big deal that he believed God? God told you you're going to whoopee do? Like, oh great. You know, if I was communicating with God and I knew that God was omnipotent and powerful and infinite and he would tell me, you know, you're going to be able to dunk a basketball one day, and even though the fact that right now I could maybe get an inch off the ground, I'd say, Right? I believe you. What's the big deal? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avraham, listen, I know you've been barren all these years, but you're going to have children. Heck, you created the planet. I'm sure you can give me a child also. What's the big deal? Right? What's the stuff? Oh. What's this belief? So says the Morva Shemesh, Tzaddikim in general are always fearful when they get promises from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We see it by Yaakov Avinu as well. Vayira Vayetzer, when he's running away from Esav, he was afraid. And Rashi explains, why was he afraid? Because even though he had a promise from Hashem, he was afraid that maybe he sinned. Right? Maybe he sinned. And if he sinned, then that changes the rules of engagement. Maybe God would decide not to give him anymore whatever it was that he was promised. So what's the pshat over here? When Avraham Avinu was promised that you're going to have a child, Avraham Avinu wasn't afraid, oh, well, maybe I'll sin and I won't deserve it at the end. Why was Avraham not afraid? The pasuk explains. V'yachsheveh lo letzedakah. Avraham always assumed that this was tzedakah. Avraham Avinu never thought that he deserved anything from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He never felt like, oh, God, I deserve this. Right? The minute you think that, oh, I deserve it for X, so if you no longer live up to that end of the bargain, then you don't deserve it anymore. But Avraham Avinu knew, I don't deserve this. This is a pure tzedakah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just giving me for no reason. And that, ha'amin v'Hashem, he believed, and that is the big deal that he believed. That he believed even though, right, he didn't deserve it. He didn't, in his mind, he didn't think that he deserved it. This is a chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us even if we don't deserve it. Now, this is where we get to you, Josh. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us even when we don't deserve it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu just does chesed all the time. He gives us even when we don't deserve it. And one of the things that we are responsible to do is to try to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which means that now we have a responsibility also to do chesed, even when the other person might not deserve it. I walk on the street, and there is let's say I'm walking towards the 417, and I see a person struggling with a stroller to bring him up all those flights of stairs. I don't know the person from a hole in the wall. Why should I help him? There is no relationship there. He doesn't deserve my help. The answer is, there is no such thing as undeserving. It doesn't have to earn the right to get a favor from you. You should just do it for no reason. Give it even though the other person is undeserving. Right? You should always look to help even people that are not at all, you know, interacting with you. People that you don't know. Right? Why should I help them? I don't even know them. The answer is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't make that cheshbon of, oh, why should I help him? He didn't do this, he didn't do that. I don't know him. When was the last time he came to davening? HaKadosh Baruch Hu just does chesed all the time. So we also should follow suit. I was once having a conversation with some Shana Bet guys. And the Shana Bet guys, maybe it was years ago, maybe it was months ago, who knows. The Shana Bet guys were saying the following. So we're talking about the 417. Anyone here ever take the 417? So where do you get on the 417? You get on the 417 by the Binyanei Umah. So I thought. But the Shana Bet guys were having a conversation. They were saying, really, the place to get on the 417 is... some what? Haturim. Really, the place to get on the 417 is on Haturim. Why? Right? Because if you wait all the way till... right? And they called it, that's a rookie move to get on the Binyanei Umah. That's what they're right? It's a rookie move. Because if you get on by the Binyanei Umah, the last stop, then it's already full and you're stuck standing the whole time. But if you get in out of Turin, so then you could sit, relax, fall asleep, listen to your iPod comfortably, and then everything is set. No problem. So I said, I don't believe it. The rookie move is to get onto Adaturim? Can't be. I said, it's just the opposite. If you get on Adaturim, that means you've taken away a seat from somebody else. What you should do is you should go out of your way to go to Binyanei Umah and be the last person on the bus, right? What do people normally do when the bus comes? Push their way to the door, like you always try to predict where is the bus going to stop in relation to the actual little budka. You're like, all right, last time the bus stopped right here. So, right? You do the same thing at subway platforms. You have it memorized exactly where the door opens up. Okay, the door I know opens up right here. And this card is, right? You always try. We should be the opposite. What we're doing when we're doing that is we're trying to worry about ourselves and be entirely unconcerned about the people around us. But over here we have an opportunity to do chesed to an entire busload of people. I don't know you. I don't know anything. Maybe you're in much better shape than I am. Maybe you're a creep. Maybe I don't know anything about you. But who cares? I'm not doing this favor because you deserve it. I'm doing it because I'm trying to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu does even when people don't deserve. That is, V'amin b'Hashem, God, he believed that God, that it would come through. And what's the revus over here? Yachsheveh lo letzedakah. That he, Avraham, considered this to be entirely altruistic on the part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was undeserving. Okay. Yeah.
So, like, what's there be like a comfortable mix? Like, I've been definitely on the bus, and when I see a bunch of like other yeshiva guys or something from the place, whatever, I'll push and shove, I'll get in front of them. But like, I've also been in line, and I saw like, let's say, a husband already on and a wife, and I'm definitely, I've gotten to just open up my arms and like go in front of me, or a soldier, or like an older lady, like I would say just go in front of me. But like with other guys, I would say we're equal.
Okay. That's what you would say. That's right. Again, if you could stand, who knows? Even though it's a guy your age, who knows? Again, who knows what you're going through? But I'm saying, maybe the other guy hurt his foot. Maybe the other guy's very tired. He was up all night. You never know. If you could do a favor for another person, a favor doesn't just mean when the guy needs it. Even when he doesn't need it, it could still be a favor. Come into somebody's house and you give him a cup of water. He wasn't thirsty. Okay, I still gave him a cup of water. Okay. Let's one more and then... Yeah? Okay. So, is this being recorded for the yeshiva? Is that what this is?
I don't know.
All right. The yeshiva, yeah, okay. It's better when we record for the yeshiva. I think Yona Friedman once told me the students that are listening in cyberspace don't like it when people ask questions. They're like, I just... But now that they've heard how you should always do favors for other people, I'm sure they wouldn't mind. So go ahead, Mr. Saban. What's your question?
Another question is, I've noticed that come. A few times on the buses or on the trains that older men or older women, they go up to little kids and they'll just tell them to get up. They don't even ask.
It's understood. In Israel, there's bumper stickers in the front. So, well, not they have it in America also, but in America, it just says, please give up the seat for the elderly. In buses and trains in Israel, it quotes the pasuk from the Torah that tells you to do it. V'hadarta pnei zaken. It's usually like written around. That's a beautiful thing. That goes back. That goes back into the first board of El Aretz Asher Ar'eka. Okay. When Avraham Avinu saves, right, wins the war, and he goes back to Melech Sodom. So Melech Sodom tells him, "All right, listen. Ten li hanepesh." Give me back the people, but I understand that you, this is Pasuk Chafalef, Tesvav Yudalet Amin Chafalef. I understand that you just worked hard, so give me back my people, but I want to pay you Harechush Kachlach. You should certainly take all the spoils of war. You deserve it. And what does Avraham Avinu say? Vayomer Avraham El Melech Sodom Harimoti Adil Hashem. No, I pick up my hands. I do not want any of this. Hashem is going to provide for me. Alright? But what? Bil adai rak asher achlua ne'arim v'chelek ha'anashem asher alchu iti hem ikhu chelkam. But the people that came with me, they should take their share. I lift my hand up, that's okay. God will provide for me. I don't need you. The people that came with me, they should take their share. Says the Chafetz Chaim, an important lesson that we have over here. What's the important lesson that we have over here? Is that you can choose to take upon yourself chumras. And it's great, and it might even be encouraged. You could choose to sometimes be more strict with yourself. But you have to make sure that if you choose to be more strict with yourself, it's only something that you do for yourself, and you shouldn't impose your chumras on other people. The fact that you're choosing something doesn't mean that it should now, right? I'm not talking about basic halacha. Right, it's not called a chumrah to be Shomer Shabbos and to expect you know, to expect your roommate in college to not watch television. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about if you have a chumrah, a bona fide chumrah, then that's your chumrah. You can't impose the right. Avram Avinu is being machmir over here. He's entitled to the money, but he says no. But the fact that he says no doesn't mean that now that all the people that went with him should suffer as well, and he says to them, don't take either. They're entitled to their share. You have to be mindful that your avodas Hashem should not affect other people. Right, there's a great joke that somebody once asked the Briska Rav, why are you so makel on fast days? Right, Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik. He was very makel on fast days. Like if anyone wasn't feeling well, so he would tell them, go ahead, eat. And then they told him, like, why are you so makel? So he says, I'm not makel on fast days. What am I? A machmir and pikuach nefesh. I think it's very dangerous. If a person doesn't feel well, he should eat, and he should eat a lot. So one time, the story goes, Brisker was coming home from shul on the fast day, and he wasn't feeling well after breakfast, whatever it may be, after shakas. So he tells his wife, I don't feel well. Right? So his wife says, okay, you don't feel well. You know, the Rav says you have to eat. So she takes, you have to eat. It's dangerous. Pikuach nefesh. She takes out the orange juice, the bagels, makes some pancakes, makes some food. Eat, S. And he eats and eats and eats. And then as he's sitting there, the wife says, you know, I don't feel so well either. Maybe I should break my fast. Chumras are not for ladies. Yeah. Right? So I was saying, that's like a joke. Don't impose your chumras on other people. Right? A loving husband would never say that. But there is actually a serious. Rav Shechter actually tells a serious story. Rav Shechter says that when he was growing up, so he learned Hilchas Bishul and something about Bishul B'Shabbos. So he turned to his mom, who was married to a Rav and obviously knew what she was doing, but he turned to her and he wondered, he had a certain chumrah. So he says, Mommy, maybe we should, maybe it's better that you make it like this on Shabbos. So she said to him, this is Rav Shechter, but he's a kid, so to tell the story, she says to him, Hershala, when you get married, you can tell your wife how you want her to cook, or how you want her to warm up things. But right, when you're in this house, then... anyway, so that's what we say here. Postscript to the story, Rav Shechter says, so I got married, and I tell my wife, you know, maybe when we warm up things on Shabbos, we should do it like this. So she says to him, Hershala, when you find a different wife, you can tell her how to warm up things on Shabbos. But anyway, the idea of imposing your chumras on other people, you have to be very careful about it. Biladai. Avram says, that's my chumrah, but I can't impose it on the children. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos. You're going to rock the old city. Very much enjoy it.